Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Better Than Hex by Annabelle Chase. Narrated by Emily Lawrence. Chapter 1. The sky was a brilliant blue, as though the clouds had parted in honor of my special day. This afternoon, I was to receive a ceremonial key to the town for my role in reversing a youth spell on the spellbound town council and apprehending the responsible party, a nasty wizard called Felix. I rifled through my closet, unsure what to wear. The ceremony was to take place on the grounds of the mayor's mansion, so I needed something suitable for outdoors. Which outfit said, humble, yet thrilled. The thought of being in the spotlight was unnerving. I didn't mind attention in the great hall, where I defended my clients. It was different when the sole purpose of the event was to put me on display, though. Not that I didn't appreciate the award. The only other award I'd ever received in my life was the penmanship award in fifth grade. My penmanship wasn't even particularly neat, but because I was left-handed, it seemed that Mrs. Roberts felt I had overcome a significant handicap. Apparently, most left-handed children she'd taught had the handwriting of a distressed chicken. I pulled a dress from the closet and held it against me, scrutinizing my reflection in the mirror.
"Do you really think that's the right outfit for the occasion?" Gareth asked, ever the skeptic.
I glared at my vampire ghost roommate. "What's wrong with this dress? It says, responsible yet feminine." He folded his arms.
"It says, boring yet oddly high maintenance."
"It does not," I countered. "And I am the least high maintenance person I know. My maintenance is low, very low." Gareth rolled his eyes.
"If you say so."
I returned the dress to the closet and chose a different one. "Hey, I'm not the one who alphabetized cans in the pantry."
"It just made things easier," he insisted. "It's a mess in there now. You've destroyed a life's work in a matter of months."
"Well, if you ever manage to move physical objects again, the pantry can be your first port of call." As a ghost, Gareth was unable to manipulate objects in the physical world. I'd hired him a tutor in the form of Lyra Gray, one of the notorious Gray sisters. She'd be working with Gareth to improve his skills in the ghost department.
"I've been making excellent progress, and you know it," he said.
I held up the next dress for inspection. "Thoughts? Or should I not even bother to ask?" He cocked his head, examining the choice.
"Not that one. It's too stuffy. Why do you even own it? It looks like something Darcy Minor would wear."
Darcy was one of my harpy neighbors and seemed to be involved in every school fundraising event in Spellbound. I sighed and placed the dress back in the closet. "Just choose one. I don't know why I bother to think for myself." He rubbed his hands together and moved to review the contents of my closet.
"There is that adorable skirt you bought at Ready to Wear recently."
He peered down the line of hangers until he spotted it.
"There, that pale pink one."
I plucked the hanger from the rail. "I haven't worn it yet because I don't have a top to match." It was silly of me to buy a skirt when I had nothing to pair it with. I got caught up in the moment with Lucy and Ricardo, my local fashionistas.
"Nonsense," Gareth replied. "You've got that gray marl cowl neck top. It's perfect with the pleated skirt."
"Really?" I located the top in question and held it against me, along with the skirt.
"Gareth, you're a genius. This looks amazing." "Why would you ever doubt my expertise in these matters?"
"Shoes?" He pointed to the set of charcoal kitten heels at the bottom of my closet on the shoe rack.
"Those shoes were made for this outfit. It's fashion kismet."
I kissed his cheek. Well, I kissed the air that was his cheek. "Thanks, Gareth. You really are my guru."
"Nice to be useful. You know how feckless I feel."
"And we're working on that," I said, changing into my award-ready outfit. I slipped into the shoes and stood in front of Gareth for final inspection. "What do you think?" Gareth tapped his cheek thoughtfully. "The outfit is lovely. It's the hair I'm worried about." My shoulders sagged. "There's not much I can do about my hair. It is what it is." He shook a finger at me.
"It's attitudes like yours that halt the path to progress. Do you think your beloved George Washington looked at the troops across the Delaware River and simply threw up his hands in despair? It is what it is, colonial rebels. Let's just accept defeat."
"Don't try to use my own country's history against me."
"I've had bags of time to read since my death. Why not show off?"
He paused.
"Why don't you wear your hair up for a change? You have a nice neck. Not that I've noticed."
I hesitated. I couldn't tell him why wearing my hair up was a bad idea. That Daniel Starr, my best friend and the object of my affection, had discovered a birthmark on the nape of my neck. A blue star that signified my heritage as a sorceress rather than a run-of-the-mill witch. Although Lady Weatherby and Professor Holmes knew about the birthmark, they hadn't placed its significance. Yet. Aside from Daniel and me, the Grey Sisters were the only ones who knew the truth about my origin. As much as I wanted to tell Gareth, I couldn't risk my secret getting out. Not that Gareth was capable of talking to anyone except Lyra and me. "I think my hair would look too formal if it were up," I finally said. "Maybe a few loose curls. Something casual." Gareth shrugged.
"Suit yourself. Is there a spell you can do? You haven't much time."
"As a matter of fact, there is. Begonia taught it to me in the secret lair."
"I thought it was all pillow fights and nail polish in that secret lair of yours."
"Careful, Gareth," I warned. "You're sounding mighty heterosexual right now." He clucked his tongue.
"Well, we wouldn't want that, now would we?"
I walked into the bathroom and retrieved my wand from the counter. I focused my will and said, "Diamond and Pearl, make this hair curl." Gareth burst into fits of laughter as every hair on my head twisted into tiny corkscrew curls.
"You look like the backside of a poodle," he said,
doubled over. My jaw tensed. "Okay, that was a bit too much."
"You think?"
Gareth said. "That's enough from the Scottish chorus, thank you." I focused my will again and said, "Diamonds and pearls, relax these curls." The corkscrews loosened and left me with gentle waves. Gareth made an approving noise at the back of his throat. "Finally, we agree on something," I said.
"I'll alert the Spellbound Gazette."
The wind chime sounded. "The girls are here," I said excitedly. My remedial witch classmates had agreed to escort me to the ceremony.
"A shame that Daniel couldn't be the one to accompany you," Gareth said.
My expression hardened. "We agreed not to talk about that." Daniel was now engaged to the mayor's daughter, Elsa Knightsbridge. Ever since their engagement, Elsa had made it abundantly clear that she preferred for Daniel not to spend time in mixed company, including me. Although I'd hoped that the fallen angel would choose me once he'd finally restored his halo, he made a left turn when I least expected it and reunited with his former girlfriend. Although I awoke with the painful knowledge every morning and went to sleep with it every night, I tried to wear a brave face for the rest of the world. After all, I had friends to care for and a job to do. I couldn't let my feelings for Daniel ruin the life I'd built here, or I'd have nothing left at all. "I wish you could be there today," I said. Gareth smiled, not quite enough to show his fangs.
"Same. You'll tell me about it, though, when you get back. I want all the gossip. Make sure you note the most hideous outfit so we can laugh."
I gave him a pointed look. "So you can laugh. That's not my style."
"No, it really isn't." He paused. "And I must admit, it is one of the things I admire most about you."
I peered at Gareth over my shoulder as I went to retrieve my handbag. Gareth, you're not getting soft on me, are you? I need the surly Scotsman I've come to know and annoy.
Don't forget your lipstick, he said, and don't wear that bright pink shade. It makes you look like a clown harlot.
There he is, I said in my most affectionate tone, and blew him a parting kiss. The grounds of the mayor's mansion were simply breathtaking. Gently rolling hills, a pond inhabited by ducks and swans, a picture-perfect white gazebo. It would have been a wonderland for children. As far as I knew, Elsa Knightsbridge was an only child. No wonder she was so spoiled. To have all this to yourself, how could it not color your view of the world? I felt entitled just standing here. Today, there were white ribbons and white balloons decorating the area around the gazebo, where I was to receive the ceremonial key. I saw Mayor Knightsbridge hovering by the microphone. She wore a sparkling pink suit, and her wings rustled gently in the breeze. My friend Lucy stood beside her. They appeared to be reviewing notes for the ceremony. Lucy was the mayor's assistant and her very capable right hand. She gave an enthusiastic wave when she spotted me.
Gosh, Emma, you make a pretty picture, Lucy said, making a beeline for me. Your hair looks better than I've ever seen it.
Thanks. Take that, Gareth.
Here's how today will go, she said, shifting into business mode. Once the clock strikes two, the mayor will give a short speech. You'll wait down here in the first row until she's ready to present you with the key.
First row. Got it. The crowd had already gathered, and my nerves began to creep to the surface.
Are you okay? Lucy asked. Did you take your anti-anxiety potion this morning?
My pulse quickened. Oh, no. In all the excitement of getting ready, I completely forgot. Lucy bit her lip.
Should I send someone to get it?
I waved her off.
No, it's too late now. I'll be fine. This is a happy occasion. Yes, but happy doesn't make you less anxious.
I can go back and get it for you, Sophie volunteered. The mayor tapped the microphone.
If everyone would please take a seat, we can get started.
I shot a panicked look at Sophie.
Not to worry. I'm sure it will be fine. It's just a key.
Lucy guided me to a seat in the first row, where the rest of the town council members were seated. Each one greeted me with either a nod or a smile. Wayne Stone, Lady J.R. Weatherby, Maeve McCullen, Juliet Montlake, and Lorenzo Mancini. Lord Gilder sat beside me. The head of the vampire coven was highly respected and an influential man in town.
Welcome, residents of Spellbound. Today we gather to celebrate a new member of our community, someone who has proven her worth in a relatively short period of time.
I shifted uncomfortably in my seat. I never realized how difficult it was to accept praise until this moment. I simply wasn't accustomed to it. Although my grandparents loved me, they were lean on praise, and I was too young to remember compliments from my parents. My mother died when I was only 3, and my father died when I was 7. I had a few vague memories of him telling me that I'd done a good job or something similar, but nothing stood out. To hear the mayor's effusive praise now made my stomach churn. Instinctively, I craned my neck to search for Daniel. He was always my port in a storm. I jerked my head forward. What was I thinking? Daniel wasn't my port anymore. He was Elsa's. The sooner I accepted it, the happier I'd be.
Miss Emma Hart came to us from the human world. It was our good fortune that she crossed the spellbound border, not knowing that she is a witch. I think we can all agree that the human world's loss is our gain.
There was a scattering of applause, and the mayor continued.
For her service to the community and her assistance in returning the town council members to their rightful selves, I am honored to present Miss Hart with the ceremonial key to Spellbound.
Everyone clapped as Lucy handed the mayor a large golden key about the size of a dachshund. The golden key sparkled in the sunlight. For an oversized prop, it was actually quite pretty. I figured I'd hang it on the wall in the foyer of the house. I knew Gareth wouldn't object to sparkly objects. After all, he was the one who'd hung a disco ball above his coffin. Lord Gilder nudged me.
That's your cue.
Oh, right. I stood and walked up the steps of the gazebo to accept my award.
And now a few words from Miss Hart, the mayor said.
I froze beside her. A speech? I didn't know I was supposed to say anything. Panic rose in my throat. It was one thing to speak in front of a small group, but it was quite another to give a speech at a microphone in front of hundreds of critical eyes. I quickly scanned the crowd for friendly faces. Unfortunately, my gaze alighted on the two people I least wanted to see, Daniel and Elsa. My heart sank like a stone when I realized he wasn't even looking in my direction. Those turquoise eyes were fixed adoringly on Elsa, and she was giggling like a teenager. She was snuggled against him, her arm looped through his. Tears stung my eyes. This was a special day, and I didn't want them to ruin it. In my experience, special days were too few and far between. What to say? I cleared my throat and stepped up to the microphone. Thank you, Mayor Knightsbridge, and members of the town council. It was my pleasure to help restore you to your normal, responsible selves. I became distracted by the sight of Elsa nibbling on Daniel's neck. He leaned over to whisper something to her, and she took the opportunity to show her affection. A wave of nausea slammed into me. I averted my gaze and struggled to find someone else to fixate on. From her place in the front row, Lady Weatherby stared at me, her dark eyes glittering like two stones. She seemed to be daring me to fail. I know I haven't been here very long, but you have all welcomed me with open arms. I'm grateful to have made so many new friends in such a short time. I hope that I continue to make you proud every day. People began to applaud, and I was about ready to declare victory when my stomach betrayed me. As Mayor Knightsbridge handed me the key, I promptly rewarded her by vomiting all over it. Chapter 2. I moved quietly around the library, trying not to draw attention to myself. For one thing, I was looking for books on sorcery and didn't want anyone wondering why. While I could pass it off as casual interest, I'd played enough poker to know that I didn't have the face for it. I walked around with a perpetual guilty expression when I had nothing to feel guilty about. In this case, though, I had something to hide. Ever since the Grey Sisters dropped the bombshell that I was a sorceress, I had to live with this awful secret. It was Daniel who warned me not to tell anyone in Spellbound. Apparently, sorceresses were a little higher up the supernatural food chain, and he worried how residents would respond to the news. So I'd pretend to be a witch for my own safety and continue to mess up the coven's spells that weren't in my nature to learn. The second reason I was trying not to draw attention to myself was because I was waiting for Gareth to appear. Desperate to combat the ennui forced upon him by death, he'd been practicing making appearances in places other than our house and office. Lyra Gray was proving herself to be an adept tutor, and her new set of pearly whites and own pair of eyes seemed a small price to pay in exchange for her help. Hopefully, the sister's shared eye would soon be a relic of the past. I had no clue where Gareth might turn up, so I made an effort to stay close to the atrium and keep watch. Not that anyone else would be able to see him, but I didn't want to unnerve people by talking to the empty space in front of me. I glanced at the titles on the shelf. Sorcery Today, Good Sorceress, Bad Sorceress, Fear No Sorceress. They all seemed equally intimidating.
Hey there, Emma. You're here late.
A voice startled me, and I whipped around to see Karen Duckworth, the vampire librarian.
Hi. I took a casual step away from the shelf.
I didn't notice you come in. What a wonderful ceremony yesterday. Did you enjoy it?
Did I enjoy watching Mayor Knightsbridge use her fairy wand to remove puke from the ceremonial key in front of 100 spectators? No.
I enjoyed it right up until the end, I said.
Karen waved me off.
Nobody cared. It was charming. No one else would have had the nerve to throw up within a mile radius of Mayor Knightsbridge. It's one of the ways you're different from everyone else here.
I wasn't convinced that was a plus.
Can I help you find anything? She asked, checking her watch. We'll be closing soon, so you may want to choose something.
That's okay. I'm just browsing, I said. There's still so much to learn. I like to see what catches my eye.
You're in the right section, she said. Lots of drama on these shelves. A lot of it reads like fiction.
She leaned against one of the shelves and smiled.
Thanks for the tip about speed dating, by the way. I've been there a couple more times since we went together. It's fun.
I'm glad, I said. Any decent prospects? Her gaze drifted to the floor.
Maybe. I don't want to speak too soon and jinx it.
I totally understand. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Gareth materialize near the cooking section. Somehow, I doubted that was a coincidence. He saw me and gave a triumphant wave.
I heard Marcos asked you out, Karen said. Good catch.
My cheeks colored. I've agreed to a friendly outing. It's not a date. And if I didn't get home soon, I'd be late for his arrival. She patted me on the back.
I know plenty of women who wouldn't mind a friendly outing with Marcos. Maybe we can double date one of these days, if my guy pans out.
I'd like that. Gareth gestured impatiently, as though I'd kept him waiting all this time.
I'm so sorry, but I need to go. It was nice catching up.
I hurried to the cooking section, where Gareth was already admiring the books on the shelf.
Once I can touch things again with more regularity, I'm going to check out this entire row of cookbooks and show you how to make a real meal.
I would think an expert like you wouldn't need a cookbook, I teased.
I want you to be able to learn the steps, he said. I know them by heart. It's not easy to teach that way. A practical guide is better.
I find it boring to cook for one person, I said. It feels like a waste of energy.
You need to eat, he said. Food gives you energy.
He was right. I hadn't been very good about taking care of myself. I'd been too distracted by Daniel's engagement. It was like a punch in the gut every time I thought about it, and I promptly lost whatever appetite I'd managed to acquire. Speaking of food, I said, I really need to get home. You took longer than I expected, and I need to get ready for Marcos.
Fine, Gareth said glumly. Race you back, shall I?
If your arrival here is any indication, I'll see you tomorrow. He glared at me before disappearing. I hustled out of the library and drove home to change and freshen up. I was already downstairs and ready to go out again by the time Gareth made it home.
Are you nervous for your date? Gareth asked. Because you look nervous.
I folded my arms. First of all, it is not a date. I have made that very clear. Second of all, I do not look nervous. I look relaxed.
Very, very relaxed. Then how do you explain that vein bulging from your forehead?
He asked. He pointed to a spot above my eyes.
Hey, I felt that.
Although I was happy to celebrate his victories, I wasn't too excited at the prospect of him poking me at will.
Every day gets a wee bit better, he said. By this time next year, who knows what I'll be capable of?
I know one fella who is extremely happy about your progress, I said, glancing down at Magpie. The hideous cat was twisting his body between Gareth's phantom legs. Maybe one of these days, he'll actually feel your legs again. The wind chime sounded, and I jumped. Gareth laughed.
Oh no, you're not the least bit nervous. Do yourself a favor and try to have a good time.
My heart raced. You'll be here when I get back, won't you?
You're not going to try and materialize at the club again tonight. Gareth patted me on the head, and I felt a slight breeze.
I promise I'll be here to listen to all the salacious details.
There will be no salacious details, I called over my shoulder. I opened the door to greet Marcos.
No salacious details at all?
He asked good-naturedly.
How disappointing.
My cheeks reddened. Sorry, I didn't mean for you to hear that. I forced a smile. I'm ready when you are. He eyed my sundress.
As much as I'd like to admire your bare shoulders for the duration of the evening, may I suggest a cardigan? We're going to be outside, and it gets a little chilly once the sun goes down.
I warmed all over from the compliment, and then instantly chastised myself. This is not a date. It didn't matter whether he wanted to admire my bare arms or not. Friendly outing only. I turned to run upstairs and nearly ran smack into Sedgwick, my owl familiar, who held a lilac cardigan in his curved beak. Thanks, Sedgwick. I took the cardigan and joined Marcos on the front porch.
You look pretty tonight, Emma,
he said. I had to admit, he looked pretty good himself. With his tall frame and muscles that Thor would envy, it was easy to forget he was actually a minotaur. I bumped him gently with my elbow. It's not a date, remember? It's a friendly outing. He gave me a flirtatious wink.
What? Compliments are prohibited during a friendly outing? Forgive me. I didn't have a chance to review the friendly outing rulebook before I left the house.
He walked to the driveway where his jalopy was parked, except it wasn't a jalopy at all. It reminded me of an Audi R8, very sleek, and even cooler because it was magical. So where's the mystery location? I asked. He'd refused to divulge the location of our outing when I asked him earlier. In fact, we'd exchanged multiple messages on the subject, which annoyed Sedgwick and Marcus's owl to no end. Sedgwick was still convinced that he lost weight this week as a result of our constant communications.
Patience, Emma. We're almost there.
We drove past the church and the casino to an area I hadn't seen before. There were fewer trees. I gasped at the sight of a field of colorful flowers. They reminded me of wildflowers, except they sparkled. How beautiful, I said. What is this place? Marcos glanced out the window and smiled.
You haven't been to Faraway Field?
I shook my head. I can't believe no one has told me about this place. It's incredible.
Technically, the field belongs to me, Marcos said. But I don't restrict people. There's no such thing as trespassing at Faraway Field.
Aren't you worried about people taking all the flowers or trampling them? As altruistic as Marcos sounded, I would still be worried about the destruction of the field over time.
They're magical flowers, Emma, he said. They simply grow back.
I swatted his arm playfully. Regular flowers grow back, too. What's so special about that? He pulled the jalopy over to the side of the road.
Allow me to demonstrate.
He got out of the car and walked to the edge of the field, plucking the nearest flower. It was bright purple and glimmered in the fading sunlight. No sooner had he uprooted the flower than another one appeared in its place. My eyes popped. Amazing! He returned to the jalopy with the flower and handed it to me.
If you think that's amazing, wait until you see what's next.
We continued a little bit further down the road until we reached what appeared to be a block of hedges. The sign read, Southeast Labyrinth. We're going into one of your labyrinths? I asked. I'd heard a lot about them, but the closest I'd been to one was the inflatable kind for children.
We're not just going to walk through it, he said. We're going to have a picnic in it.
He parked the jalopy and proceeded to open the trunk. When he came around to open my door, I noticed the wicker basket in his hand. Wow, a real picnic. I don't think I've ever had a picnic before. His brow lifted in surprise.
No.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?